Good morning. Please open your gray hymnal to number 38. Number 38, Morning Has Broken. Number 100, Peace Like a River.
Thank you. Come, come, whoever you are. Wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving. Though you've broken your vows a thousand times, ours is not a caravan of despair. Come, yet again come. Let us worship together today. Welcome, everybody. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Holly Rowan. I've been a member of this church since 2006. I love singing in the choir. I love helping with the little ones in the nursery a lot, but I'm here at the service most of the time. But I sure love those little ones. I also love working with the worship team and the worship associates. I love being a worship associate. This is a ministry. We do have a strong lay ministry here, and we're all growing and learning what our ministries are. I also occasionally lead rituals outside on our Echo Preserve to celebrate the changes of the seasons, the phases of the moon, and our Earth-based holidays. We are a green sanctuary here and a very welcoming congregation to all, the LGBTQI, whatever letter is next, community, are all welcome here, and I am one of them. I want to give a special welcome to our visitors and to people that are new to Unitarian Universalism. You'll find a connection card inserted in your order of worship. Oh, it used to be. It's in front of you now in the pews. We would like to get to know who you are. We'd like to put you on our email list if you would like to receive our weekly newsletters and our monthly communicator. So if you have new information about how to reach you or you would like to be on our list, this is the greatest gift you can give us today, even more than your money. Okay? It's you. So if you are new also, we would like to invite you to attend Hobart Hall, our coffee hour afterwards. We have special yellow mugs, and these mugs are nice. They hold a lot, and that's a way we can identify who's new or visiting, so we're sure to say hello to you. So members, look for the people with the yellow mugs, please, and please show them your mug and say hello. Our monthly theme this month is This I Believe. And this is an idea taken from an NPR radio show. Some of you might have heard, have any of you heard of that show, This I Believe? And so we are exploring core beliefs of some members outside of this community and also of our own membership. So that's why this month, while Allison is gone, Reverend Allison is gone, we have guest speakers. Next week we have a special service that will be completely lay-led, and we will hear from a diverse cross-section of this community here at what is the core of their belief system. For the members of this congregation, as you should know by now, we have a new president of our Board of Trustees. His name is Steve Eisenberg. Steve, would you stand up so we can see what you look like? Okay, this is Steve, our new president. Thank you. So Steve may be new to some of us, which is why I asked him to stand. He's going to make himself available to meet with whoever would like to speak with him about the board or get to know him and what goes on the board more. He will be at the membership table at coffee hour in Hobart Hall, here off to the right after the service. So please say hello to Steve, too, so he gets to know us. Our guest today is a dear old friend of mine, Imam Abdul Haq Muhammad. I have known Mr. Muhammad for well over a decade. I asked him to speak to us today about what he believes as a Muslim and as a longtime activist and community organizer here in Lee County. Abdul Haq Muhammad, Imam Abdul Haq Muhammad, is the executive director of the Quality Life Center here in Fort Myers. He has more than 30 years' experience designing and providing positive programs for youth and families. He founded a nonprofit in Bronx, New York, whose services included a halfway house for ex-offenders, an after-school program, a preschool, and several businesses. He's run businesses and has traveled extensively meeting with leaders concerning business and educational opportunities. Mr. Muhammad has incorporated programming to enhance character development, combat violence and drug abuse, reverse the victim mentality, and tackle the negative self-image often found in that black culture. Children in the program learn manners and self-respect. Yes, they do. I've met them. Through his leadership and example, he has generated a sense of community and hope that reaches far beyond the Quality Life Center into this entire community. He is the founder of the organization, and he's been their executive director since its inception. So let's give a warm welcome to Mr. Muhammad. We'll be hearing a lot from him. Thank you. Sometimes applause feels really good in church, doesn't it? Okay. So our chalice lighter this morning is my good friend, Helen Dixon. So while I'm introducing Helen, we'll just listen, and when the introduction is done, then we will light the chalice together. Helen's been a member of our congregation for 11 years. She loves her goddess within, and she loves the service auction, which we celebrate on February 25th, 2017, with the theme of the Roaring Twenties. This is all Helen said to say about her, but I have a little more, so hold on. Okay? Helen is one of the most generous and giving people I have ever met. She also volunteers her time, just for example, here in our church every single Tuesday. She takes care of our bank deposits, answers the phones, and much more. She donates hours of her time to the Grace Project, both here and in rural Guatemala. She volunteers at the Hapahatchee Center, and she is treasurer for the Democratic Women's Club of Lee County. She was one of my first friends here in this congregation and has been a steadfast and loyal sister to me and my partner, Liz. So please rise now in body or spirit and join Amy as she leads us in singing the words of our covenant while Helen lights the chalice. We will remain standing for our opening song.
Love is the spirit of this church, and service is law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another.
Please remain risen for number 193.
Our friends are ready.
We have a storyteller today that's going to tell us an Aesop's fable. So I'd like to invite all my young friends to come on up here, because Mr. Muhammad has a story for you.
Here's this. You want to report this part?
No, that's okay.
Okay. Yes, sir. And young of heart. Come on up.
Now, is she the only young at heart that's here? Perhaps I can challenge you right now. All of the young of hearts, join us. There we go. They got courage. Well, all of us are familiar with Aesop's fable, and one of the wonderful fables, of course, all has a deeper meaning than what is being articulated. And so I'd like to share with all of you who are young and young at heart, which includes me. Though I'm 68 years old, I'm young at heart. And if you don't believe that, come and visit us at Quality Life Center. And from 2 years old up to 18, I'm right there with them. There was a dying man sharing some wisdom with his children. He had a couple of sons, and he wanted them to take something precious before he expired. And he said to them as they drew closer to his deathbed, "Come and take these twigs." And so literally I stopped on the road to find some twigs, but I figured they were so wet it wouldn't work this morning. So with my friend Rahim, he bought these pencils. So let's see if this works. Now you know how people go through things on TV. They be struggling to get it out. Can you help me? You want to help me? Come on. What is your name?
Lily.
Lily? Okay, wonderful name, Lily. We're going to talk a little about gardens. You ever hear of a lily in the field? No? Okay. Kind of sounded like Edward.
Okay.
There we go. Okay, who else can join Lily? Can you join Lily? Come on up. What's your name? This brother is scared to death. All right, how about one of you guys? Come on over. There we go. Yeah, the USA. USA. Good. Okay, so look at what we have. And of course, this is no mystery to all of you. These are sticks. Can you say I have sticks in my hand? Okay, not number two pencils. I have sticks in my hand. And I would like Lily, and your name?
Brandon.
Brandon, okay. I would like Lily, if you can hold this. Hold this, Brandon, for me. Can you hold it like this? And hold it on each end. Okay, put your other hand there. And the father said to his children, as he gave them the sticks, and he said to break them. Can you break that? You can't. Okay. Now, I hope you're not some martial art expert here. Yeah, mess my whole program up. Brandon. Okay, try like she did. Can you break that, Brandon?
No.
Did you try?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. And so I'll give Lily a stick, and I'll give Brandon a stick. Now, can you try breaking it? Okay. Okay, Brandon did it. He's the martial art guy. That's okay, Lily. That's okay. The real reason is that you didn't want to destroy a perfectly nice pencil. I got it. I got it. So the moral of the story, as many of you already knew, I know you are students of Aesop's fable, is that the father was trying to send a message to his children to stay in unity. And his point was, is that as the sticks are gathered together in a bundle, he asked them to try to break it and they could not. And then he separated the stick from the bundle and asked them to break it and it broke. He wanted them to understand that in his absence and his passing on, he wanted his children to stay united. You see, unity has great value when we're united in truth. in virtue, in something of great importance. He wanted his sons to continue to be united and love one another so that the future will be great, great and beautiful for the two of you. So this is our little story of Aesop's fable. Thank you. You want to keep that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It's like in martial arts. When they break boards, they want to keep the boards.
Let's join together in singing the children out with number 413, Go Now in Peace.
Thank you. What a great story. Now's the time for meditation. So let yourselves get really comfortable in your seat, whatever that is for you. Maybe you'll want to uncross your legs. Maybe you'll want to feel your feet wherever they land. Gently close your eyes. Or soften your gaze if that feels better. Notice your breath. All meditation begins with the breath. Just noticing breathing in and breathing out. Let the air you breathe in move gently. And as it moves out, just notice. You might notice warmth through your nostrils. Can you breathe deep into your belly now? Can you release that breath evenly? See if when you breathe in and breathe out, you can make those breaths even, say, breathing in to the count of five. Breathing out to the count of five. This air we breathe, this air we share, is full of what the Sanskrit traditions call prana. Prana is life force energy. This life force energy moving through your body now with your breath is more than oxygen. It is radiance. It is the love we share here as a community. It is light, pure light. Prana, a sea of love and light energy, is all around us in this room. We are sharing this prana here together in this sanctuary. The air is charged with our collective consciousness. We are breathing together in a sea of prana. As you breathe in, let your belly fill. And as you breathe out now, imagine that your whole spine is filling with light. Breathing in the sea of prana, and as you release your breath, let your spine, let your heart fill with light. With each breath in, focus now on your heart. You have a physical heart, and you have a heart center that extends in front of you and behind you. Keep breathing that light into that heart space Imagine all that light illuminating the space that is your heart, your physical heart, and your energetic heart center. As you breathe in the sea of prana and breathe out, opening your hearts to that light, that love, let this be our silent prayer in this room as we breathe in and out together. Breathe in and open. Breathe out and fill. Open my heart to all that I seek. Let me be a part of the love you give. Open my heart to all that I seek. Let us be a part of that love you give. Let us take one deep breath together. And as we breathe out, let your eyes flutter open gently when you are ready. It's become a cherished tradition here in our church to offer a stone of intention each Sunday. We hold these stones, and Mr. Muhammad, I have one for you on your pulpit if you would like to hold one too. You don't have to. We hold these stones in our hands and we infuse them with our intentions, our prayers, our hopes and sorrows, and then we come forward here or to the sides, and place your stone in the sand as a blessing, a prayer, an intention, a joy, or a sorrow. If you did not bring a stone today or pick one up on your way in, feel free to choose one in the baskets that are provided right next to where the bowls of sand are. And you can hold that stone for a moment before placing it in the sand. The music will play till all the stones are offered. As I hold this stone in my hand, I would like to bring into this circle of love all those suffering the loss of loved ones due to gun violence in this community, in our hurting nation, in France, and in all the world. I have a prayer that I want to share from a dear friend of mine from long years ago when I lived in Maui, my friend Katie Grace. This heart is a prayer wheel spinning, turning, offering a friendly wish and a mighty prayer for all beings. May we awaken. May we reach for peace. May we love one another. May we practice fearlessness in the world. May we walk the talk in solidarity with the oppressed and the vulnerable. May we dance to the wild music of great faith and great doubt. May we do small things with great love. Please come now, if you wish, to the sides or to the front to offer your stone of intention while the music plays. Thank you.
Please remain seated as we join together in singing number 1013, Open My Heart.
I lost my page. Be with me for a moment. Here we go. Well, I had an introduction to the poem I'm going to read, but I'm going to ad lib it just a little bit. And then in 1975, I lived on the island of Maui, and I spent a glorious year there. It was a time when many spiritual seekers from all over the world were looking for paradise. And they were looking for gardens underneath which waters flow. Many religions came there and many teachers. And I myself found a teacher, and he was a Sufi teacher. And I found a group of Sufis, and I studied with them and was initiated with them for a year and a half. I learned a lot from them. I learned to sing and pray at the same time. I learned a moving prayer that they called zikr, where we would move with the prayer as we spoke the name of Allah. It was very uplifting. And that was a time when I discovered Rumi as a poet. Now, I had a whole history of Rumi's life here, and I've lost it. But I think, here it is, good. Jalaluddin Rumi, who lived in the 13th century, was truly one of the most passionate and profound poets in all of history. Today, his presence still remains strong, due in part to how his words seem to drip of the divine and startle a profound remembrance that links us all back to the soul essence. He was born what is now called Afghanistan in the present day in the year 1207. He produced the masterwork, the Masanawi, which consists of over 60,000 poems before he died in the year 1273. The best way to fully say in words his impact is that he has the ability to describe the indescribable, the ineffable, the experience of spirit. Today I've chosen one of his poems for our service called Moving Water, which is translated by Coleman Barks from Rumi. There is a way between voice and presence where information flows. In disciplined silence, it opens. With wandering talk, it closes. Moving water. When you do things from your soul, you feel a river moving in you, a joy. When actions come from another section, the feeling disappears. Don't let others lead you. They may be blind or worse, vultures. Reach for the rope of God. And what is that? Putting aside self-will. Because of willfulness, people sit in jail. The trapped bird's wings are tied. Fish sizzle in the skillet. The anger of police is willfulness. You've seen a magistrate inflict visible punishment. Now see the invisible. If you could leave your selflessness, you would see how you've been torturing your soul. We are born and live inside black water in a well. How could we know what an open field of sunlight is? Don't insist on going where you think you want to go. Ask the way to the spring. In the air with balconies and clear water flowing through, there is a moving palace that floats in the air. Infinity everywhere, yet contained here under a single tent. Thank you.
Thank you. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. With Allah's name, most gracious, most merciful, the compassionate. We witness that there is none deserved to be worshipped except the one God, and we witness that Muhammad, may the peace and blessings of God be upon him, is the last messenger. We learn through Muhammad the prophet, may peace be upon him, that all of the prophets from Adam to the Old Testament prophets and Jesus, may the peace and blessings be upon him, are all brothers of the faith. The genesis of their insight comes from one source, no different than the beautiful rainbow that we may see with the beautiful spectrums of light and color. Recognizing from one source springs so many. Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you. I'm grateful to be here at the Unitarian Universalist Church, a place that has distinguished itself of being an environment of welcoming of people of all faiths, from all congregations, of all philosophies. The Unitarian Universalist Church is very dear to my heart. And every time I come here, I tend to remind you of the same thing. Because I was influenced by the open-minded philosophical view of this congregation and its thinking. If you notice and you would pick up one of the hymn books, you will see songs that embraces all faiths. What a wonderful idea coming from the Unitarian Universalist Church. You should congratulate yourself. You are a narrow few in the world of people who have closed their mind yet express that they are people of faith. We're compassionate, we're loving, and we're forgiving. I speak to you from the traditions of the Judaic, Christian, and Islamic perspective of gardens beneath which rivers flow. This idea of gardens exists in the sacred texts of what is known by Christians as being the Old Testament and the New Testament and in the Islamic faith tradition. The gardens in beneath which rivers flow happens to be a destination, a goal, a vision. A vision for one's life to recognize that our lives are finite. Each and every one of us have an expiration date on our lives. Well, at least that's what I think. As we get older, we recognize that we're getting closer and closer, and often, as we get older, our minds expand and our hearts expand right along with our minds to embrace this big humanity. The leadership of the Unitarian Universalist Church has led the charge in this way. And I fell in love with this congregation because I felt the unity of the faith that I have embraced, and that is Islam. You see, Allah tells us in the Quran that for the Jew, for the Christian, for the Sabi'een, for the Muslim, those who follow their book and have good deeds will have their reward in paradise. The makeup of every human being is to constantly strive to reach such paradise. Every choice that we make often is a decision that is to bring peace to our lives. Even the drunkard is seeking peace. Even the person who snorts cocaine, injects heroin, drops pills. Somewhere in their life, they are seeking peace. The many people who come to church on Sunday, come to the mosque on Friday, worship from Friday night to Saturday, are all seeking peace. The challenge is the illusion that we often think that what we're doing will bring this peace. This idea of gardens and beneath which rivers flow is the destination of all humanity. Gardens and beneath which rivers flow was the genesis of human expression, found in a garden, created by the Creator. Then we're put out of the garden, and then we have our journey in this life. And this life is not a garden. It's a test. It's a trial. This feeling of this garden that we all are seeking also can be found in the tender womb of a mother, where water surrounds. And we have recollection of being in this very secure environment. The description given in scripture, the description given in Islam, the Arabic word is Jannatun. Jannatun is a garden with protections, a garden that shields, a garden in beneath which rivers flow, where water perpetually move and serve that garden in abundance. The Creator has given us this picture of this peaceful environment that we're all are seeking. But we happen to have been put out of the garden. We happen to have been birthed and born out of the garden of the wombs of our mothers. And there we find a life of challenges, problems, and conflicts. And unless we read the sacred text, unless we connect, whether it's Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, aspects of Hinduism, regardless of that faith tradition, you will find a philosophy of living that is designed to give us guidance in this life as we live. The problem is that we want it always our way. And it's not going to be my or your way, because this environment, when the baby was birthed, it comes out crying. It was a horror show. Oh my God, where am I? You think the baby is just crying because that's what the baby does? No, the baby came out crying because it says, oh, sugar. Where in the hell did I arrive? I think the children went somewhere else. This is the adult version. What is this? And on top of that, I get hit. You're talking about corporal punishment. And here we are in this land, and we are experiencing struggle. And as I shared with my staff, you know, if you think that your life is going to be without conflict, you are living a dream world. The key for us to understand is how to live in an environment of conflict, how to follow universal laws that can be found in all of the sacred texts. How to be able to overlook each other's faults. How to be able to experience hardship and at the same time learn to forgive. That's not so easy for human beings. A beautiful African proverb. A nation cannot be toppled from without unless there's an enemy within. Generally, this saying is interpreted from a militaristic or nationalistic or political premise of interpretation. But I invite you to go deeper to recognize that you and I as human beings cannot be toppled from without unless there's an enemy within. And often we find ourselves in deep struggle and turmoil, not because what has happened to us, but because of how we responded. You see, we're living in a time, I'm holding on to that rock, Holly, because I have some thoughts. I have sorrows. And I have joys. I was on TV about a month ago, and we were talking about the conflict or the horrific incident in Orlando where so many lives have been killed and taken. And I was being asked, and as the questions came at the end of the interview, I teared. I teared, one, not only because of the tragedy in Orlando, which was painful and hurtful, both in the perception that a Muslim did it, and both the hurt and the pain that resulted from the deed or the action. I teared because my mind went back to every child that has been murdered in the streets of America. Not only by police officers, but there are many by police officers and law enforcement. But also many that have been destroyed and killed by their own relatives, neglected, taken advantage of. I teared because of what's going on in Syria. I teared what's going on in Iraq. I tear what's going on when we think, as we sit, many of us, not all of us, and I know this congregation is above average enlightened about world events. But often, too often, Americans sit with a myopic view that we're the civilized and everybody else is uncivilized. Too often, we sit comfortable in our church environments, in our homes with air conditioning flowing and no worry about how we're going to survive. And we read or observed on TV the shock and awe that took place in Iraq, and none of us were concerned about the devastation of innocent children and lives in hospitals and mosques and homes that were destroyed. It was so horrific, the TV news did not even show the carnage. Who did that? Our government. Our government out of fear, our government out of various motivations, our government, and we sit quietly in our environment and raise not a voice while humanity suffered. We cannot be toppled from without unless there's an enemy within. I challenge all of us to get smart, to have courage like some of those young people who were older, who walked up, that took a little courage, you know. I invite us to take a little courage, to look within ourselves and understand what positions are we taking. Sometimes we just simply need to listen. I'm so proud of some of the members of our congregation, the Center for Islam and Cultural Awareness. They're here. There are many others. But you know, sometimes it's really hard for people to leave their comfort environments and be open-minded to learn how other people think and other people worship. Thank you for being and accompanying me this morning. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Because we have a holy book also that tells us to move about, Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, has a beautiful saying. He says, travel as far as China to seek knowledge. Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, understood that he did not have a monopoly over righteousness and knowledge. He invited the followers to travel as far as China, seeking knowledge. That means that it's all not right here. Learn from other people. That's what I love about the Unitarian Universalist congregation, because they have courage to open up their hearts and meet others, even if they don't embrace personally the philosophical views. What a maturity to be able to embrace humanity, even though the behavior of the human being is opposite than what you believe in. Embrace that human being. And why wouldn't we embrace that human being? If we profess belief in the Creator, then we also should understand that nothing happens without God's permission. Yes, the tsunami was with God's permission. Yes, Katrina was with God's permission. Yes, the countless lives of young boys of color is with God's permission. Yes, the slave trade that occurred is with God's permission. You can't believe in God, the all-seeing, the all-knowing, without coming to the awareness that this existed by God's plan. Adam was put out of the garden because of making a selfish choice or decision. Jesus was found in another garden. And in that garden, he can hear the footsteps of people coming to him, soldiers coming to him to take his life. He could have fled, but he didn't. Because there's a high spiritual awareness that nothing happens without God's permission. And that sometimes, as human beings, while we're in this temporary space, in this world that we're living in, we must not live our lives under fear and avoidance. We must live our lives to embrace and to hold on to the faith traditions that we have and just simply not abandon it because those around us are abandoning it. But to recognize that what sometimes we may fear is our emancipation. What we may fear is our liberation as a people. That's what the Creator, I believe, wants us to understand. That faith is having courage. Faith is standing up with people of all faiths and challenging the ugly in our society, even if we're going to subject ourselves to some loss. We just buried a beautiful brother, Muhammad Ali. He's beloved by people all over the world. He took a position at the pinnacle of his profession to earn great wealth and have great prestige. And he made a decision that appeared as though he would not achieve that. He refused to go to Vietnam and fight and kill people. His logic was beautiful. You want me to kill the Vietnam or Vietnamese or the Viet Cong? They never called me nigger, he said. What logic? He said, you are my enemies right here. They never called me nigger. They're not depriving me and my people of opportunity. That took a great deal of courage. And as a result, look at how his life turned out. Yes, he has Parkinson's. He shakes. But I've got to know him personally. We traveled together in this country, and we traveled to Morocco together. And wherever he went, he was beloved by all.
people of all ethnicities, of race, of backgrounds. He was loved because he tapped into the essence of humanity, the virtue in which we all have heard, but yet too often we fail to live. He meant a great deal for humanity. It wasn't about the color, it was about the character. I invite, as I conclude, as we strive to get to the garden and beneath which rivers flow, which is the human destination of all of us, be mindful that we have to take stance that will threaten our lives and the comfort that we enjoy. But it is through that level of faith that will allow us to be emancipated and liberated. It is through what you fear on this earth, confront it, and it will disappear, and you will find yourself transition from a life that is a burden, living in fear and avoidance, to a life of joy and purpose. The prerequisite for getting to the garden and beneath which rivers flow is how we live here on earth. And we can design our future and our destiny by being able to have courage to get to know people. You know, there's not many raisins in the pie here, you know. You know, when I come to my beloved brothers and sisters who I've known for many years, every time I come, I might be the only raisin in the pie here. But when I come, I love you because I feel and hear your call and your message of humanity. Regardless of what we may look like, you're reaching from your comfort environment and you're reaching to welcome. So even though I may be the only one or two raisins in the pie, I see my sister there from India, I think. She's a raisin in the pie. I see her when I come. Even though, sister, we're just a couple of raisins in the pie, we love the message. We love the heart. We love the humanity. So let us rise up. And I know a little about your history. If I can take a moment, Holly. The early days of Christian persecution during the time of King Constantine. They persecuted the Christians, and those Christians were Unitarians because they believed in the oneness of God. They were persecuted because they believed in the oneness of God, that God is not a man. God is not an object. God is creator, not creation. And all of the messengers and prophets of God came to express that common theme and that common message, the oneness of God. And the early Unitarians were persecuted because they believed in the oneness of God. And then a sun worshiper came named King Constantine, and he gathered all of the papyrus, and he established the Trinitarian doctrine. You see, the history of the Unitarians is deep because it was designed to integrate all humanity under the oneness of Almighty God. I don't know if you all know that stuff. I don't know if you know that the history is deep of the Unitarians. You got good stock, good historical experiences. So don't get amnesia about that level of strength. And I know that this church, I need to tell you, this church had the courage and have had the courage to put on forums of Islamic phobia and speak to those issues. They've had the courage
to speak to the issues of the gay community and how they have been suppressed. They've had courage to speak to every injustice over the years of people. They've brought Mary Edelman, if many of you know her, Mary Wright Edelman, has spoken here in this congregation, the woman who heads up the Children Defense Fund out of Washington, D.C. This congregation has been on the forefront of fighting for justice for all humanity. That's part of why I like the Unitarian Universalist. But I will invite you, don't hide and look for peace and think that you're avoiding something. You will never avoid it, because that's what we're experiencing today. There's conflict. But when we meet that conflict, watch it begin to dissipate. May God bless this congregation to continue to fight the good fight, to share the knowledge, to be courageous, and to love and to meet people of all faiths and all persuasions. And you will find that on the day of judgment, if you believe such, you will be blessed. Thank you for having us here today with you. God bless you. Thank you.
Please rise in body or spirit as we join together in singing number 207, Earth Was Given as a Garden.
Thank you all, and thank you, Mr. Muhammad. I know we've gone over our time, but I think that we've all been on the edge of our seats listening. So we're almost there. It's time for our offering. And here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Fort Myers, we work with the law of abundance in a really creative way. We believe that if we pay it forward, then our needs in this church will also be fulfilled. So each month, we donate all our undesignated funds in the collection, cash or checks, to one or sometimes two organizations in the community that need our financial support. This is part of our social justice ministry. So please be generous as the offering baskets are passed today. If you want your donations to go to this church, you may use the yellow envelope if you have cash and check UUCFM on the front. Same as with a check. Write UUCFM in the memo if you want the check to go towards the church. So this month, we're splitting the pot between two very important organizations that help with literacy for all ages. 2 weeks ago, we heard a representative from the Early Learning Coalition of Southwest Florida, and she spoke eloquently about the enhancement of the quality of children's lives by providing families, early childhood educators, caregivers, and community partners in Collier, Glades, Hendry, and Lee counties opportunities to positively impact the future with reading. Our second organization that we will be splitting this month's collections, since this is a 5-week month, is to the Literacy Council Gulf Coast, LCGC they call it. Its mission is to assist adults and children to acquire the English literacy skills and education necessary to improve their quality of life and to enhance the entire community. As the largest literacy nonprofit in the United States, they still need local funding.